5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to another hour of Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott. Good to have your company this week. As always, I'm joined by my guests, Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet. Hello to you, Robin.
Hello. I've just spilt my tea. But I'm in the process of sorting it out. So, yeah, carry on.
All right, so you're just going to clean up a mess whilst we're... That's generally what the show is to some people, is a complete mess. So, you know, you're going to have two jobs in your hands today. Yeah. You're going to be a busy guy. Tim Schwartz is here from lifeafterblindness.com. Tim, have you spilled anything yet?
Actually, I did spill a little juice when I was prepping for the show, but I thankfully didn't spill it all over a keyboard, which is usually what I do. So we are safe and sound right now. Although I'm more concerned about you, Stephen, because you've had coffee and sugar.
Oh, I've had a lot of coffee and sugar. This is going to be a wild ride. Strap yourselves in for this one. Emails, Andy, how are you this week?
I'm very well, thank you, Stephen. How is everyone else? How are you all doing?
Well, never mind anyone else. You're asking me, right? I mean, you know,
don't run this thing. First and foremost.
Right, okay, so come on. Never mind anyone else. What about me? Why are you not talking about me?
It's all about you.
Yeah, of course it is.
Coffee's kicking in.
Well, that's the problem. No, I mean, I have spilled today beans. I have to be quiet here because my wife...
Spilled the beans?
Just literally spilled the beans.
It's a secret.
My wife doesn't know that I've spilled the beans. Later we'll find out. I mean, I know I should have cleaned them up. And I will do that.
But you've got two dogs in the house, though, so surely they would have cleaned it up by now.
That's the problem. You see, the dogs are out during the day. They go to the little farm nearby. It's quite a big farm, actually. I mean, I haven't measured it, but, you know, I think on farm scale, it's a decent-sized farm. And I... So it's just me and my wife in the house, and I had made some lunch for myself before coming in here to do this. And yeah, I'd shaken out my can of beans and sausages, you know, because I like a full meal. Yes, I did say can of beans and sausages. You know, that's how I live. Yeah, this will shock Robin to his core. I taught Robin, you know, about cheesy pasta. He had no idea what cheesy pasta was until he met me.
Yeah, I mean, we do have macaroni and cheese. That's a thing.
You're aware of the concept.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know,
I thought you were talking metaphorically, spilled beans. I was waiting for some juicy secret, but...
Oh, no. I wish there was something. There's nothing going on. No, it's all very quiet. Which is why, actually, on this week's show, we thought we would focus in on one thing that... Let's just say something we should maybe do. Because we haven't done for a little while, and that is get through the inbox of emails. I think, if I'm honest, we've had so many great guests on the past couple of weeks, it's been difficult to make room for emails because we've just, you know, having the Android chats have been really interesting. Echo last week, getting into that, it's been really, really interesting. And now, look, I also want to start with an apology because eagle-eared listeners, is that a thing? Is that a thing? Is that the right phrase? Eagle-eared listeners?
Keen-eared. I don't think so. Keen-eared.
Right, okay. Listeners.
What has good hearing? I don't know.
Yeah, no point asking you, Robin.
No, what?
Exactly. God, that's shocking. Have you got that fixed yet?
Well, what, you mean like new ears? I went to the doctors a while ago to see if I had lots of earwax in my ears.
Oh, come on, I've just eaten.
No, you can talk about beans.
I
can
beans and sausages out of a can, but I don't want to hear about earwax.
She had a look in there and she said, nope, you'll be pleased to know there's not any earwax in there at all. And I said, no, you don't understand. That's the opposite of what I wanted to hear.
You're quite hopeful that there wouldn't have a reason.
I wanted just to scoop some stuff out and I could hear better, but no.
Oh, come on.
Either they're clogged or I'm getting old. One of the two. I don't want the latter. Yeah.
I could apply to anything, frankly, yes. Our age, yeah. Well, on that bombshell, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. So,
eagle-eared,
yes. So, emails. Yeah, we're talking about a lot of things, granted. You know, it's funny, before we started recording this show, Robin said, listen, if we're just going to be sort of going through the emails and just, you know, responding to people... you know, kind of yes, no, this is great. It's going to be a dull show. I think you guys are learning very quickly. That's never really how this show works.
I didn't need to learn that. I knew that years and years ago. Yes, we can make anything out of nothing.
Exactly. We've done really well with that.
Often
yes,
do.
We are very skilled. We are highly skilled at that, yes.
But anyway, my point is that the eagle-eared, if that's a thing, amongst you, may be wondering where the demonstration of the R&IB microwave is this week.
Yeah.
So here's the thing.
Hey, you promised.
Well, I did. And, you know, as you know, never trust anything I say.
Correct.
Because you're guaranteed to be let down. I'm not going to even try and excuse it. I still have the microwave in a box, and I haven't taken it out of the box yet. So I can't try it.
Can you even find the box? Is it buried amongst all your other Amazon deliveries and things?
It's somewhere. I know it's in the house.
Ah, see, that's there's.
You know you're in a bad way when you can't find a microwave. That's when you know it's time to clear out.
Yes. In a box, covered in beans, somewhere in the house.
Exactly.
Well, because the thing is, someone might say, well, hang on, if you've eaten beans and sausages, I bet you've cooked that in a microwave. So what microwave have you used? Well, I used my old Cobalt one. That's my original classic talking microwave. But of course, the question was, I think from Kelly last week, what does the new one sound like? So look, I will get out of the box for you. I promise. I have to get out of the box and try it because R&IB very kindly sent me it to review it. I haven't taken it out of the box yet. So, you know, what does that tell you? So I've got to get out of the box and I will do a demonstration for next week. And if I don't do it, you can slap me around the head with a fish.
Interesting microwave fact, in the absence of your demo, your review, do you know what Welsh for microwave is?
Hang on, yes. before we do this, how many people are we going to offend with this joke?
It's not a joke, it's the actual word in Gaelic. Welsh.
It's weird. It's weird that I know what it is as well, and I don't.
Yeah, go on, go on.
Poppity-ping.
Poppity-ping.
What?
That is it. The actual name. Poppity-ping. And apparently it's nothing to do with the sound.
No.
It's from an actual kind of, you know, linguistic root. I don't know, but that's what it is.
Shamai, Barada, Poppity-ping.
Indeed.
So Poppity-ping review next week.
Well, I'm looking. Well, yes, indeed.
Possibly.
I think the sad fact about what you've just said is that that's the only thing people will ever remember from this show. That's the only thing people are going to be saying to their friends. Do you know what the Welsh for microwave is? It's poppity-ping.
Educate, inform, and entertain.
One day we'll get all three.
We've got a podcast title already. That's that sorted.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Well done.
Okay, well, it is time to get into the email inbox because, well, look, we need to, and from my understanding, there's a few in here that are going to rub Robin Christopherson up the wrong way. I love it!
We get your email every day.
Ding dong.
Here's your mail today.
Right, let's get into the email inbox then. All right, Andy, on you go. What have you got?
So over the last couple of weeks, we have had a couple of specialist Android-themed shows, haven't we?
Uh-huh.
Which is an often requested, thing for our show. A lot of listeners saying, hey, why don't you talk more about Android? So, of course, we've got a few people emailing in with their thoughts and opinions, and we start with Negative Julian. He says, hello, chaps. Negative Julian here again, proudly negative and having no need of a regnal number. That's Negative Julian shunning the fact that we call him Julian II. I have just been listening to podcast 364. Thank you for reading one of my emails. And what a delight it was to have so much about Android. Welcome to the dark side. Do you feel its power, young Jedi Stephen?
Is this some kind of Star Trek reference? Because I completely lost.
Star Wars.
Oh, right.
So why am I writing, says Julian? Well, it's because someone has to challenge some of the drivel you were sprouting. I told you I was negative. Spouting.
Back to food again.
Yes. Point one. It was said that you have to go premium in order to get a powerful phone with any chance of getting an OS upgrade. I disagree. Firstly, remember that if you buy a mid-range Android phone, say £200 upwards, you'll be getting much of the same technology as a premium phone of 2 or 3 years ago, i.e. the same technology that at the time you were saying was amazing back then. We have much of the premium level improvements been since then? Well, I will suggest that much of it has been in cameras, super high definition screens, and supersonic refresh rates. I accept that for the partially sighted, this may have value, but if you're blind or severely sight impaired, as I am, then who cares about any of that? As Stephen himself said, the camera in any modern phone will be good enough for our purposes. As for the speed of the chip, well, my main phone is getting on for 3 years old. It whizzes through Google Lookout, the Google Assistant, web pages with aplomb. Do I need it to be a nanosecond faster? Updates. I confess there's some truth here. Android phones are notorious for slow or non-existent OS updates, but to say that it is impossible to buy cheaper models that will get updates is not right. The key here is research. Some manufacturers are better than others. My best advice is to try and find a phone that is part of the Android One program. That will get you stock Android and a guarantee of at least 2 years worth of updates, sometimes even 3 years. I believe all current Nokia phones are Android One. Xiaomi also has some good ones. Now, before Robin says anything about generic Chinese manufacturers, remind him that Xiaomi is one of the biggest phone makers in the world. For years, they have been in a dogfight with Apple for third and fourth place in the world ranking. Samsung and Huawei are first and second. My second point, says Julian, it was said several times that dark mode and screen inversion are experimental. This is simply not true. Since Android 10, they have been fully implemented. For sure, they don't work with every app. That's because not all apps follow the rules. There are limits as to what Google can do about that, quite apart from anything else. Still some useful apps that have not been updated in years. Third point. Robin seemed convinced that because of slow updates, any Android phone user is doomed to only have the accessibility included in the original operating system. This is nonsense. In line with the spirit of Project Mainline, the Android Accessibility Suite is provided and is updated as a separate application in the Play Store. Now, this is an advantage because it can be updated independent of the OS and on a different upgrade cycle. It is true that some of the features in each upgrade may be OS version dependent, e.g. my understanding is that future multi-touch gestures will need some code included in and around Android 11 and will therefore not work with earlier versions, but to say that nothing will be gained from each accessibility suite upgrade is incorrect. This is also true of other accessibility features, such as the Google Assistant, accessibility blocks, and voice access. I think that completes my rant. Keep up the good work. Have a nice day. Negative Julian.
Oh, well, Robin, I think this is on you.
Well, what? Sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Oh, that old chestnut.
I don't remember saying half of that stuff. But anyway, all good points, Julian. Thank you very much.
You probably did.
I probably did, but I wouldn't say like doomed and stuff like that. That's not my thing. But anyway, sorry?
What is it about generic Chinese manufacturers, did you say in a previous episode?
Yeah, I don't know.
Offending Chinese companies again.
I really don't know. I'm sure I said that my son's phone looks gorgeous compared to iPhones. And that's a Samsung. But anyway,
I think also, I'm wondering, I can't remember it exactly because I have a mind like a sieve, but I know when Dinos was on, I know we discussed this in great detail. And then, of course, we had Steve Nutt on the following week. So I think some of the comments may be attributed to Dinos rather than you. I'm not entirely sure, but, you know, just...
I believe that's more accurate. I mean, there were some things I think that came up in general discussion about the operating system, and we've all been nervous for a number of years about purchasing an quote unquote off brand, you know, at least to our respective countries, and not getting the proper OS updates, not getting the proper talkback updates. But Julian is absolutely correct. That is so much better, which is why I think that we all agree that if you're looking, depending on what your budget is, you know, the Pixel 4a is such a good price. It's so competitive, say, with the Apple SE, iPhone SE. And there are cheaper phones, as Julian points out. There are some that are, you know, £200 and up. So it is better than it was even a year, two, 3 years ago. And yeah, I mean, I do think that some of that could be attributed to our guests, but I don't know. I don't think
it was probably me.
It could have been Robin. There might have been some things there. But I think it is in a better place.
When it comes to the actual Android experience, I think we can all agree that, that things have improved. I mean, certainly we've got that proven over the past couple of weeks, I think from a low vision perspective, as well as a blind perspective. For years, as you know, I've suggested that I think Android is better for someone who's partially sighted and iPhone's better for someone who's blind. But again, that seems to have changed. And, you know, I've got to say this as well, and I think this is the bit that people don't hear when I say this, but, you know, I'm not dissing Android at all. I'm not saying that Android is terrible and no one should go and
buy
it.
Not anymore.
No, well, not even... I mean, it's not. We're not in a Microsoft narrator situation, which was, you know, don't touch it with a barge pole, or if you are going to use it, you know, only use it to download a screen reader, another one, you know, like NVDA or JAWS. I mean, things that have changed as well, and that's something I will be talking about in a couple of weeks' time. But I think things are improving on this without a shadow of a doubt. And if you're starting out now, you can start off with either system and you will go on fine. I think the key difference, the key word that comes up time and time again, whenever we have the discussion on Android versus iOS, is customization. That's the key word in this. If you want the ability to really dig in to your phone and do lots of different things, customize the style, customize the look, customize what's on the screen, you're going to have more options than you will ever have on iOS, although that's changing as well to some degree. So, you know, but and I know that I'll get email after email from people saying, yeah, but you can do this and you can do that, and there's lots of this app is available over here, and I get all that. But look, let's just agree at this stage that we maybe just shouldn't do the Android versus iOS thing anymore. Because truthfully, there isn't a major difference between the two. If you choose Android, you'll go on fine. It's not that you're going to be hitting a brick wall. And the reason I recommend, I think it's Google Pixel Classes Premium. I mean, maybe it is, but I don't know. I just think it's you know, that kind of level where you're getting the best features for the best price. For me, anyway, as a consumer, I'm thinking I can get that on contract. It's not going to cost a huge amount of money. If I want to buy it outright, it's not going to cost, not going to break the bank. You know, compared to something £1,000 or £1,500, which I wouldn't pay for some of these high-end devices that will give you great features, but then you're looking at really high-end screens, really high-end cameras. Do we need that as blind people? Probably not. That kind of mid-range, as I would call it, is more what I would recommend. Anyway, look, I know there's more another email on this, so let's get to that, Andy, because more people have more things to say on this topic. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, right after you said let's put to bed the Android versus iPhone debates, this next email from Andrew Walker is on the Android versus iPhone debates.
Make it the last word. Let's make it the last word on it.
Right. Hello, says Andrew Walker. Once again, an extremely one-sided podcast. I'm not sure if Robin in particular is aware of his own biases, as it appears he thinks that Android would be a lot better if it was like Apple iOS. I can give examples in answer to his questions about what Android, in my view, is better at. Firstly, Braille screen entry is much superior and reliable on Android devices. It was a long time coming, but it is stable and doesn't go silent or drop out of Braille mode, as I find Braille entry on iOS devices do. Robin seems to think that iOS gestures are superior, but in my view, they are just different, and I would sooner use my Android phone than my iPhone. I use both devices, and I'm not wholly convinced that iOS is superior. For some time now, the gestures on Android have been much more reliable and forgiving in Android 10. In my view, it's very easy to use. Lookout, I guess you might say, is the Android version of Seeing AI, is my preferred method of product identification and much more accurate. Of course, this might be down to the products I try to identify. Seeing AI is good, don't get me wrong, but it's like a third-party app, and unlike Lookout, which is Google. Another area where Android scores over iOS is in editing and granularity switching, which is different from iOS and much better in my view. Using the rotor on iOS has always seemed to me to be difficult and hard to find the right spot for selecting features, and is also easily activated by accident. Perhaps the biggest difference is that Siri is appalling as an assistant, and I would say that Google has a distinct Edge. In addition, text voice dictation on iOS is terrible in comparison to Google. I'm rarely able to write more than the simplest of text messages on iOS without the need to edit the text manually, which is an absolute pain on iOS, and editing I find much easier on Android. Apple has the 10 years or more to get these things right. Siri in particular is widely said to be poor in relation to other offerings which came later. In my view, there are only two things which work better on iOS, and one of them will be fixed in Android 11, I understand. That is the magic tap for starting and ending media playback and text voice entry. The other, as you have indicated, is Braille display support, which has been problematic for some time. The latter will be an issue for only a small number of users. Braille is important, but personally I never use a Braille display on my phone when out and about. Don't get me wrong, I like my iPhone, but it has shortcomings which do not seem to be represented on Tech Talk. In fact, the only one reason that I have an iPhone is because of Apple Watch compatibility. In fact, I believe that Apple makes it deliberately difficult to use their products on some devices. Anyone who has tried to access their Apple Mail using Outlook in Windows will probably have encountered difficulties, and after going through the convoluted setup process. Rather than forging ahead, as Robin seems to suggest, I think that Apple accessibility is now a very complicated affair, and personally I find the AI functions introduced cause me more problems than they solve, and it is one more thing in an already cluttered rota. That is an email from Andrew Walker.
Well, before I let you jump in on this, Robin, I want to just pick up on a few points. So, you know, I think the key word here that comes out is personal view. Because there's a lot of things you're saying in there, Andrew, that you absolutely believe are true, but I got to disagree. You know, I think that, you know, I mean, and interestingly, Steve Nutt came on last week, or week before, I should say, and told us that Braille was not an issue on Android now. In fact, actually, in some ways, Braille is better now than it ever has been, and he challenges anyone, and I put this out to everyone again, to say, if you're having problems with Braille, go to Steve at Computer Room Services and talk to him about it, because he says, according to him, that there aren't any issues. I've heard this as well. I've heard other people say there are issues, and I don't think there seem to, well, Steve doesn't seem to think there are. But, you know, when you talk about gestures on the Android device, you know, I just feel like my finger's on a skating rink every time I use it. I don't feel this handle on the system that I do with the iPhone. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the style of the phone. I don't know if it's the screen. I don't know if it's the operating system. It just seems so easy to accidentally hit the wrong thing and, or, you know, lose focus very quickly because your phone's just, you know, your finger's just nudged something. And, you know, I don't get that with iOS. Not to the same degree. It does happen, but not to the same degree. And, I, you know, I just feel things like that. You know, as for Siri, yeah, I agree. I think Siri's terrible at times. But, you know, if I was to have Lady A or Google on my phone, I'd probably rather have Lady A than Google even. So, you know, again, it's all choice. And it's a good thing. This is a good conversation to have, because we're not saying, well, look, we can only use the Apple. No one's saying that. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is we can use anything we want. But it's personal choice as to what we want. I'm not, the idea that the three of us or the four of us, you know, sit here like, you know, I don't know, gods on a mountain. I mean, that's obviously how we consider ourselves. But, you know, we sit here like gods
on
a mountain.
Speak for yourself.
I am. you know, sitting there on a mountain, you know, espousing about all the wonderful things that, you know, Apple can do and that everyone should just follow suit. It's nonsense. That's not what we're saying here. We're talking on our own experience, and that's why we invite other people on, like Steve, like Dinos, who can talk about their experience from their point of view. But, you know, since Robin is the one who's most biased, let's point to you and see what you think of all this.
I'm undoubtedly biased, and I'm hoping that I will rectify that as I get more and more au fait with Android. But a couple of things, yeah. I mean,
well,
the Siri was...
Hang on. Why should you, though? If you're happy in Apple
bias
world...
Bias isn't a good thing. I think informed choice is, like you say, that's what it should be about. It should be about the fact that you've got personal preference based on knowing the pros and cons of each one. So, yeah, and I evidently don't know
Android
as well as some.
Hang on, right? If you drove a car, right, and someone said to you, oh, I bought a Kia the other day, and it's a great car, I love it. And you say, yeah, I like my BMW. And someone said, oh, you're biased, driving your BMW, and, you know, you don't even know what a Kia's like, but you've never driven one. Well, no, I haven't, because I can't drive every single car on the planet just to decide that you're right because you bought a Kia and that it's okay. But you know what? Maybe in the end, I'll just end up sticking with my BMW. It's just, you have to make a choice, and it's okay to make a choice, even for us.
Yeah, there are things that I can comment on from experience, though, and that is the poor quality of Siri compared to the Google Assistant. I can totally get that. You know, you can have a Google Assistant app on your phone and just give that a little test drive in iOS, and it won't take long before you realise the difference there. So, yeah, I wish Siri would improve. The final point about a cluttered, already cluttered rotor, I mean, I would just say declutter it.
Yeah,
you know, you can choose what you put in your rotor. And if you think that the recent additions, you know, like screen recognition and image recognition, isn't adding anything for you, take them out of the rotor so that you won't even, you know, make sure they're turned off, and then remove them from the rotor just in case you accidentally select that and activate it by mistake. So, yeah, rotor management's, I think, a really important point, because it can get really cluttered. I've only got, I don't know, a tenth of the possible options in my rotor. That,
yeah, but we're surely we're not complaining now that there's too much choice. Oh, there's too many features. Surely it should
hopefully
be the opposite.
Hopefully not, because I think that's really good, because somebody else's rotor options might be very different from mine. So, yeah, I think choice is a good thing, definitely.
Yeah. Tim, do you want to jump in on this?
Absolutely. Now that Robin has stepped down off the witness stand, you are excused from the courtroom. Yes. You know what? If by bias, the definition would be, this is what I use, this is what I'm used to, and I don't have familiarity with the other things, so I really like what I use, then I guess I'm biased. But like Robin, I don't know that I like that word in this context. I understand it, but it is more about, this is what I use, this is what I've been using for many, many years. It's what I know. I have tinkered with Android, and before a year or so ago, I would have still said, yeah, Android's okay. If it's the first thing you get into and you haven't ever tried an iPhone, you'll probably be fine. You won't miss anything because you don't know what you're missing. So, but now, there are so many updates with Braille screen input, with multi-finger gestures, things like that. And they do, I haven't used the multi-finger gestures, but from people I've spoken with, like you said, Stephen, it does kind of feel slippery, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
It doesn't feel quite right, according to people I've spoken with. But that doesn't mean that that's everyone's experience. That could be operating system. That could be which version that they have of TalkBack. That could be a lot of different things.
And
who
it's
knows?
What you used first, right? I mean, I don't know
exactly
what Andrew's case is. Maybe he used iPhone first. Maybe he went to Android first. But I think whatever side you begin with, whatever one you use, I mean, I'll give you a great example of this. I'm currently looking at trying to learn a new audio editor, because I can't keep using what I'm using. I'm using Adobe Edition version 3. It's about 20 years old. It's going to break at some point. At some point, I'm going to open it up and Windows 10 is going to say, are you having a laugh? you're trying to bring this thing up from the dead, and I've got to think of something else. So I'm currently having that battle of what do I go to? And this is kind of the, I guess this would be the, you know, Apple have just announced that they're, you know, shutting down the business and that we all have to move on, and Google's the next step. And we're all kind of going, now what? And that's where I'm at with the audio editor. And it's really difficult when you have to make a decision to move on to something else, because what you're so used to is working for you, well, up until now at least. And I think, you know, it's so difficult, but it's what I'm used to, you know, and that's the key. Whereas now, with the phone situation, I'm used to Apple. I like Apple. If I'd got an Android first in the last 10 years, I'd got an Android or gone down the Android route, then maybe I would have fallen in love with it more. That's it. To me, that's as simple as that. It's just a personal choice. And I'm kind of getting sick of people telling me that, you know, it's wrong to say that, because if I was an Android guy and I was saying that, then would you be saying the same? Probably not, because you're an Android fan, right? So, you know,
I think at this point it's definitely personal choice. And as we did mention on those episodes, at this point in time, because of the updates, because Android finally has multi-finger gestures, whether they feel crisp or not, the functions, the features, the abilities of what each of them can do as a screen reader, as phones for us, are similar enough now where, yeah, you pick up either one and go with it, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
So I think it's just that personal preference. It's whatever ecosystem you feel that you want to be a part of. It's what you're comfortable with. And both are very viable at this point. Now, I will say one last thing, because I'm sure we want to move on to another email, but the rotor issue with iPhone. I know a lot of people have trouble with the rotor, not only from the standpoint of there being so many things like you and Robin were talking about. And of course, like you guys said, you can remove or add or whatever. You can even move around and reorder all those things. I've probably only got 4 or 5 things. Well, depending on the app and depending on the screen. If it's an editing field, there's a couple extra ones, you know, text selection and edit and things. But basic navigation, I probably have 3 or 4 things in my rotor. I still use the turny rotor, for lack of a better phrase, you know, turning your fingers like a knob on the screen. However, what I've discovered in the commands area where you can change what those gestures are and reassign them, something that's not even assigned to anything right now that I have found is almost identical, but not quite, and works really well for people, is the 2-finger swipe left or 2-finger swipe right.
Me too.
So if anyone is having trouble at all placing their fingers and turning them for the rotor and it feels clunky and it's not working, change it to 2-finger swipe left and 2-finger swipe right respectively, and your whole world will change when it comes to the rotor. That, to me, is the best alternative. I'm sure you can change it, of course, to anything you like, but I think that's the most natural feeling alternative.
And is that under the custom gestures on iPhone?
Correct, settings, on the right? iPhone, yes. Go into the custom touch gesture commands, yes.
Okay, I said that too, yeah.
I'll be doing that right after this program. Let's get another email, because I'm assuming the next one's not about Android versus iOS, is it?
No, but it does mention something you're talking about. It is an email from Dave Nason, who has a bit of an iOS bugbear regarding the rotor. So he says, "Hi, Steve, Robin, Andy, and Tim. I was just listening to episode 354, where the ability to customize voiceover gestures on iOS was mentioned. Stephen also mentioned how he, like many other people, struggles a bit with the rotor gesture. This is actually one of my iOS bugbears. I so often hear of people being taught that the rotor gesture involves placing 2 fingers on the screen and turning them, although like you were turning a dial. This is indeed rather awkward. The reality is, all you need to do is place 2 fingers on the screen and move them in opposite or roughly opposite directions. Quickly swipe to move by a single increment, or keep the fingers on the screen and slide to move by multiple increments in one go, if you wish. I've passed this tip on to a number of people over the years who are struggling, and they've generally said that it helps a lot. Also, thanks for the shout out for Apple Viz. I'd love to get a new Mac to try out Apple Silicon, but unfortunately, I only upgraded less than a year ago. Sad face emoji. At least one of the Apple Viz team members is getting one, and I'm sure plenty of people on the forum will too, so I can't wait to hear how VoiceOver performs. Thanks for an always great podcast. That's from Dave Nason.
Yeah, I mean, people have this thought that you have to, like, contort your hand and your fingers and really, you know, twist them. Or, you know, I've heard some people say, well, just put your fingers down and then just move the phone, not your hand. You know, it feels so clunky and not comfortable. And I can understand that. But it doesn't have to be that difficult, as he said, because I've sometimes put 2 fingers down and you can almost just move one of the two slightly, and it will think you're doing the rotor sometimes. So it can be easier than I think some people make it out to be. But as I've said, if you still just can't do it, just change the command. Just change it.
I don't like that rotor gesture at all. I think it's nonsense. And that's another thing about, you know, people would say, well, on Android, you don't have that problem. Yeah, you don't. You're right. Although it depends on which version of screen reader you have. On the Samsung one, I think it's single finger left, right, or up, down. I don't know if it's the same on, I think it's different on, because you get different menus on Android. You know, you can sort of swipe up and then right, and that gives you access to one kind of menu, and then it's all a bit confusing. But yeah,
But the fact that on both you can change those commands, you know, Android allows you to do that, you know, especially now with the multi-finger gestures. I've recently changed how you can either read all or read from the top as a two-finger swipe up or down respectively on the iPhone. I actually have that as next heading now. So swiping two fingers up is previous heading, swiping two fingers down is next heading.
Oh, that's good.
And I never use the read from the top because I never want to read the whole thing from the top. So the read from where I'm at downward, you know, the read all, I just assigned it to something else that made more sense to me, that was more comfortable to me because I don't use it all that often. But jumping by headings, I use like crazy. And yes, I could go to the rotor and access it and do it that way. But just doing a quick two-finger swipe up or down to go previous or next, oh my gosh, it's changed my life. So, you know, just go in there and play with it and see what you can change to make it more comfortable for you. And again, that can be done on both. So it's beautiful.
Okay, Andy, what else have we got?
Hello, everyone, says Stephanie. The nice lady from R&IB Technology for Life team has just beaten me to it. I discovered NaviLens a couple of weeks ago and I was going to make a demo for you. I thought about adding some things to her review of NaviLens. The app developers suggested that you sellotape your tags to items, but having gone to so much effort to cut them up, I wanted to be able to reuse them. So I bought adhesive A4 printer paper, Perspex discs, and ceramic magnets from the web, and I stuck them all together. This has gone very Blue Peter, this. Now I have 35 magnetic labels that I've stuck to my cans and my fridge. On the fridge magnets, I have recorded the cooking instructions for items in the freezer. I can read them from any point in my kitchen just by waving my phone in the right direction. Yeah, but there are so many more uses for these tags. You could stick them on locations that you need to find at work or in your environment. You could stick them on bins, post boxes, doorways, bus stops. You could even stick them on the vending machines with the instructions of which buttons to press. You could stick them on the doors in your workplace so you can find the right one to go down to the corridor. There are endless, endless uses for these tags. Since the smallest ones are only 1.5 centimeters, people are not going to notice them. The bigger the tag, the further a distance away it can be seen. So as long as your phone can see it, it will read it. There's a much cheaper option. This is a much cheaper option than something like Bluetooth beacons. The R&IB ran a demo with Kellogg's in October, in which they put these tags on the front of a cereal packet so that your phone could read it as you walk down the cereal aisle. I think this would be brilliant if the tags on all of these packets, there we could identify things like cooking instructions. I contacted NaviLens to check that once you use up the first set of tags, you could get more. They kindly sent me a second set. They also took on board some comments I made about the usability of the app. This is definitely a venture that should be supported, as it's a much cheaper option than a pen friend and thus has more uses. Hope this helps. That's an email from Stephanie.
Yeah, the impression I got about some of this was that you could print out your own, as indeed you have done there, Stephanie. You printed out your own. So I'm not quite sure why you would need more from the company. Because if you can print out your own labels, then why would you be concerned about running out of them? That's what I'm not sure of there. But, I mean, yeah, I think this is good. I like the idea of this. But then some would argue, you know, what's a QR code? And, you know, I don't know if QR codes, maybe it's just that the implementation is better because it's built specifically with us in mind, this particular app, or whether or not QR codes can actually link to information. I think they can. I'm pretty sure they can.
Oh, they certainly can. I think the system of this one is that, like you say, you can print them out and you can also print them huge. And there may or may not be a solution for doing that with QR codes. But, you know, if you can print them in A3, then you could get to a destination across a busy lobby in a huge building, you know, because it would be able to see it 50 feet away. So, I think part of the NaviLens solution is navigation and part of it is object recognition. So, from the description, it's not like a pure QR code. It's their own kind of flavor. What improvements that has over the standard, I don't know.
Well, it's linked to the app mainly, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So it's immediate. You're not having to go to another site because a QR code will take you to something else.
A web page, yeah.
So you'd have to make sure that that was, and that might be where the challenge lies, people setting that up. Whereas if you can actually just program these codes to be whatever you want within the NaviLens world, then it's a lot easier. You just literally point your phone. I mean, it's funny because I know that RNIB did the work around Kellogg's and it was great work. But the idea of having an entire shelf or an entire aisle filled with those would be a nightmare if you think about it. Because you'd end up with, you know, it would just be every box talking to you. I mean, I think about Seeing AI, and this is where the technology is good, but it's not perfect yet. Seeing AI is a good example of this with short text. If you're trying to read something and you're holding your phone, if you even move your phone like a millimeter, it just stops whatever it's reading and starts again. And you have to sort of hold it really still so that you don't end up having to, you know, especially if you're trying to read a long thing or something that's, you know, reasonable length of text. It'll just jump right back to, "Dear Mr. Scott, we wanted to tell you that. Dear Mr. Scott, we wanted to tell you that." It's like, "Tell me what?" You know, it takes forever to get to the bit that I actually want the information. So, you know, the technology's not perfect for that kind of stuff yet, but it's getting there. This is a good app, though. Navilens is a good app, and many thanks to the team at Technology for Life. I think it was Hannah Rowlett that brought us that feature from the team. But yeah, I do like the idea. Right, let's get another email in from Andy. What have you got there?
"Dear Stephen, Tim, Robin, Andy, and David." There's a special shout out for David Woodbridge, if he's listening. Thanks for the 2 hour special. The review of the year, which I really enjoyed. A couple of simple and cheap suggestions to issue that you raised. One, AirPods falling out of your ears when you're doing exercise. Now, you can get a cheap sports strap, the Spigen Air strap, the Spigen AirPods strap from Amazon, specifically designed to stop you losing your AirPods. The one I have is for the first and the second generation AirPods. I use this all the time when I'm out and about with mine. Two, to avoid the problem of having jaws and people talking over each other on Teams, I purchased a small TechNet USB audio adapter from Amazon that has a 3.5-inch socket for headphones and microphone. I then tweaked my laptop audio settings so that my Teams meeting goes through the USB audio adapter and my jaws goes through my laptop 3.5-inch socket. I have an earphone in one ear with Teams and in the other ear jaws. Works a treat. I have had to put an external microphone into the audio adapter. Using the same audio settings on my laptop, I can also plug in a USB over-the-ears set of headphones with a microphone, which covers the audio from the Teams call, and then I run an earphone from the laptop headphone socket to hear jaws in one ear tucked under the over-the-ears headphones."
There's not a test at the end of this, is there?
Oof, there's a lot of ears and headphones and microphones.
There's a lot of wiring going on there.
You can use the audio. You can use the audio settings on the laptop to adjust the balance so you get the Teams out of just one headphone, just out of one ear. Hope these suggestions are useful. Keep up the good work. Yours, that's from John.
Because you can obviously send jaws audio, and this is the same on the Mac as well. You can route the voiceover audio to another audio channel. So that's what I do with my setup, but that's because I've got a mixer, so I've essentially got two outputs going to my mixer from my Mac. Well, more than two, actually, but, you know, two that I need. One for this call, but if I wanted to do something with voiceover, I don't want that getting into my mix of audio, so that I don't want you guys having to listen to voiceover. So I've got it in a separate earpiece, but actually, the way I've wired it up, it comes through the same headphone. Yeah, I'm not even going to get into how all that works, because to be honest, even I don't have a clue. It's magic, I tell you. Okay, let's get a voicemail in, because we got a voicemail in, I think, from Peter. I could be wrong here. I think it was Peter who got in touch with us on email. So let me just play this in here if I can. This is Peter Stewart, yes, who got in touch with us by email. He dropped in this voicemail.
"Hi, Tech Talk team. It's Peter the Great from Robin Hood County.
Hi.
Hoping you are all well. Thank you for a very interesting, informative and common sense look at the differences between Android and Apple.
Oh, thank you.
It was nice to hear about both Android and Apple. I liked both. I can use both. At the moment, I'm on Apple. I used to have a Samsung Galaxy 3 with my browser called Georgie. Now, there's a blast from the past. And that helped me narrate texts and emails. I think Georgie gave me the greatest joy ever when I was able to narrate my first text to my sister. So, all fair play to them. Mm-hmm. But now, Apple has done a really good job and I use Apple because it has the apps I need. I don't have to do very much, and I don't have to worry about getting under the hood to have a tinker, because I'm prone to that, and that's when accidents happen. Anyway, thank you again, and I can predict lots of emails coming, so perhaps a two-hour show is not too far away. Hint, hint, hint. Take care for now, everybody, and look forward to some more very interesting Tech Talk programmes. From Peter the Great, bye-bye.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Peter the Great. Truly great.
What a great voicemail.
Yeah.
From Robin Hood County. Nice. Like it.
Step Love back it. From that microphone, Robin. Stop getting excited. Okay, yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to that point, right? I mean, it's just about choice. And, you know, some people will love Apple, some people will love Android. And, you know, I agree it would be... And I feel it would be nice to have somebody on the show regular who was always espousing how great Android was and talking about it and, you know, giving that point of view. But the problem is I find it's very difficult to get those people because there aren't a huge amount. I think it's the more curious, the more techie, I think, out there who are actually into the Android world. I could, and I've said that. I can hear the keyboards being
careful.
I can hear it right now. It's like this. It's
I'm just, typing you an email like, as we speak. I'm writing one myself.
That's all I can hear at the moment in my head is just endless keys being battered. But I think that there's more techie people out there using Android than there are using the Apple. But that's not saying that people using the Apple are not techie, right? It's just it's a different beast, because Android does allow you a lot more flexibility. But then there's the other side of the coin, which is cost. And some people say that, you know, you can get cheaper entry point to smartphones, and that's true as well. So it really is horses for courses. But I think we've over-egged that particular pudding very well. I'm saying we'll draw a line under it. Let's see what the inbox is like next week. Yeah, Andy. Sure.
Hi, gang. Well, I thought I would take you on yet another trip down memory lane.
Oh, this is we Kelly, isn't it?
This is Kelly's email.
Yeah.
We had the Opticon, and then we had the 8-track talking book player, and now I have yet another gadget that we might have used long ago. How many listeners on Tech Talk remembers the television sound receiver?
Anyone yes.
Well, I think Robin's older than me. I didn't have one of these, but do go on, Andy. Do go on.
For those of you who don't know what it was a black and white television that had no screen. The idea was that if you had one, you didn't need to have a TV license. And at that time, audio description didn't exist. And in the 1980s and 1990s, we were all still using black and white television. It was very popular for blind and partially sighted people at the time. It was also very portable. It wasn't until the early 2000s that TV all became digital. Now, I had one of these and I rather liked it. The only thing was that you could only get 4 channels on it. In a way, I miss it, but I don't think it would fit into the 21st century. That's all for now. That is an email from Kelly.
I kind of wish it would, though, in some ways come back. Do you know, guys, I mean, did you ever have anything like this, Tim, in the States?
If there was something like that, which I wouldn't be shocked if there was, it would be probably slightly before my time. I mean, I'm old, but I'm not quite of that age. I mean, I do remember black and white televisions. So, I mean, I'm old enough to remember that. I'm old enough to remember Betamax tapes and things like that. But
oh, I saw one of those on eBay the other day. It was a Sanyo. I had one of those. It was a Sanyo one I had. And they were selling it for 50 quid. And you know the temptation to buy it? It was just, I don't know why I don't have Betamax tapes anymore. But I was just like, oh, I love the tactile buttons.
I can send you some. I think I've got a box somewhere of some old beta tapes.
Oh, don't even tease.
That was a better technology, apparently, than VHS.
It was better than VHS. Yeah, just not as long form. And we won't get into the reason why VHS took over. But,
well, it was money primarily, wasn't it? I think length of tape and
there was
money.
A certain industry that chose VHS tapes, and that industry sold more, and so everybody went to that format. Anyway, we don't want to talk about that here, I'm sure. What was I saying, though? No, I remember, I mean, my first little TV I had in my bedroom as a kid was a black and white, you know, hand me down basically for my parents, you know, a little, I don't know, 13 inch, you know, black and white TV, you know, and I annoyingly played my Nintendo on it until I could get myself an actual proper color television. No, I don't think we had anything like this. Although, that being said, I mean, Netflix recently is trying this audio-only function because they think that we want that. So, I mean, it's kind of coming back in that sense, audio-only. But, yeah, I don't know. Would this really work today? Would people? Is this something that people would want as an audio-only television?
Well, I know Robin wouldn't because he doesn't care for television.
He doesn't watch television.
I mean, right. It would be very doable. It would just be an app, basically, that took the audio part of the stream, you know, the service that the BBC or ITV or whoever it was providing.
Well, yeah, but you do
I do that
there.
On TuneIn Radio. I'll watch CNN or BBC or, you know, whatever, and they're just showing the television feed, or I'm sorry, playing the television audio feed over TuneIn Radio, but there's no visual. But yep. That's just news, though, not actual programming.
I don't know.
It's doable.
I don't know why nobody yet has done this where you could get, and I say this, there's probably very good legal reasons why, but I can't imagine it would be that difficult for the broadcasters to say, let's put all of our audio or all of our TV channels in audio with the audio description turned on in some kind of audio service that could be delivered over the internet.
Or digital radio.
Well, that would cost a fortune. But no, you could do it over the internet, you know, over mm-hmm. Lady A or yeah. Google Home or whatever. And you could listen to BBC One with AD, BBC. That'd be amazing. I'd love that. I'd probably just get rid of my TV.
Something you said there, I've been wishing for forever. Why couldn't they, you know, any of the streaming services, even if you have to link it to your subscription for the service, that would be fine. Put it as a skill on Lady A. If I could access all these different streaming services I have and just have it be a skill on Lady A or an, even an app on Apple TV, although I have their primary apps, but you know what I mean? You know, it'd be perfect for Amazon Echo to do that and just have it be the described content.
Well, I mean, you can do that with the ones with a screen, you know, with Netflix and Hulu and the likes, but yeah.
Sure.
You get pictures.
Well, there was a way to do it, actually, from Sky. Here in the UK, maybe 10 years ago, they had this thing called the Sky Gnome. And what they developed was a little gnome-shaped thing, just a little triangle thing. And it only had on it a little display which told you the channel number and the channel name. And there were 10 buttons on there, so 1 to 9 plus a 0. And you could choose, you know, if you knew the channel numbers, there's a channel up and down, a volume up and down as well. And what happened was the audio from your Sky box, from your TV box, would be sent to the Gnome. And obviously you could turn on audio description, right? So you could turn on audio description on your box, so it was always defaulted. And then you would take your little Gnome upstairs or into the spare room or wherever you wanted it to go, and you just turn it on and it would receive the audio via, I guess, the same way that headphones, wireless headphones get their signal, and you just be able to listen to TV on that. And it was a great little thing. And when Sky moved away from the whole, you know, Sky to Sky Plus to Sky Q as it is now, that was all trashed. But, you know, what a really great idea. The idea was, I think, for a lot of people, they could have the audio from the radio stations that were running on Sky. They could listen to the TV in the kitchen. You could essentially take it around the house with you. Because it was
that's the best product name ever.
Sky Gnome, yeah. It was great. I loved it. It was a great little thing, and it really irritated me that it was gone, because that kind of was what I was looking for. Obviously, that in this case, it meant you needed a Sky subscription, so that was a bit of a down, but it was great. And, you know, I don't know why they can't. I mean, there's a lot of things people are doing out there that they're trying to recreate. So, for example, some people I know are getting, like, Freeview boxes, and they're connecting them to IR blasters, and they can, you know, control them via the Lady A, and then they're connecting the audio via something that can stream, and therefore they can stream it around their house and listen to it on their Echo, you know, use an input or something to be able to send the audio around. But that's a very homemade solution. What we're looking for here is a box that can do this. I mean, the question is, would we use it in 2021? Is it necessary?
If it was a specific box that I had to spend lots of money on, probably not. But if it was a skill or an app that I could integrate with what I'm already using, I would absolutely use something like that. I mean, there are apps that offer audio described tracks alone that you can listen to. And I absolutely
use that. Smart speaker is the perfect vehicle for that.
Yeah. Now, this conversation does remind me of something I saw on Facebook recently with some audio description people who were in the know. And it sounded like they were dropping hints that something like this not only could be possible, but could be coming. So maybe we'll have news about this sometime in the future that you could just listen either in your car or on Alexa. I'm always the one that says the word.
I can't say the word.
Well, see, I don't use that as my wake word, so it doesn't bother
That's
me.
That's true.
Much, so,
you yeah. don't care. Yeah, fine. Yeah. I love the idea. I love the idea. Oh, yep. What have you started, Kelly? That's it now. We all want one of these boxes. I do. I would be so happy with this. Just being able to listen to it. I mean, just that's it. Just say play BBC One on Lady A. That'd be so good. With AD, obviously. No point if it doesn't have AD. Because guarantee it'll come along, we'll get it, and it won't have AD. And that'll be the
as
whole thing.
As long as it always begins with a recap of the previous episode, you're into it, right, Stephen?
If this is you complaining about my love of books, or lack of, I just wish books would have a previously on. I wish every time a book started, it would say, previously on this book, and then it would tell you what happened. Because I can never remember. It's like, well, who's this guy again? Why is this person, you know, why is this person dead? You know, what is this all about? And, you know, I want these questions.
You realize, that Robin and I are probably never going to let this go.
No, I know that. I know that. Don't forget, you can get your books for free from RNIB. You can call the RNIB helpline and well get done. Your talking. See what I did there? You see how I brought it round?
Yeah, but when's it coming back? to the Echo?
Ask someone else. Why are you asking me? Stop bothering me with this.
They said coming soon. Come on, guys.
Exactly. Email tech for life.
I can tell you. I can tell you. It is coming soon. That I can tell you. We're almost out of time. Okay. Can you believe it? That's an hour up.
Wow.
Andy, please tell me we're getting to more than four of those emails off that list.
Oh, definitely. We have cleared, about four or five pages?
Oh, we're doing amazingly well.
If you want to add to those pages... Or you could even leave a voicemail.
Don't encourage them.
Like a voice message, as Peter did there. But the email address
please do,
is...
actually. Yeah, please do that.
techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Well, lots more conversation on next week's show. And just a reminder that we'll be joined by the Technology for Life team. If you have a question about technology that we are not able to answer, and I should say, actually, a lot of the emails that you've been sending in that have specific questions... around areas that maybe we don't have the answer to, we are passing those on to the Technology for Life team, just so that we can get the best answer for you. So, if you want to get in touch with them directly, you can do by calling the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999, or you can email the team TFL, that's short for Technology for Life, TFL@rnib.org.uk, and the guys will be happy to respond and give you some direct advice if you need help immediately with your tech problem. The RNIB helplines open at 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. Saturdays. You can email as well, as I say, tfl@rnib.org.uk. Robin, Tim, Andy, thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Catch you next time.